You're listening to Vatican Radio. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. I'm about to take a look at the more personal side to Pope John Paul II, soon to be canonised by Pope Francis, bringing you a very Polish sound picture of this Roman pontiff. Describing moments of joy drawn from prayer, of course, but also from acting, dancing and peripatetic philosophy.
Behold, a Slavic Pope is coming, a brother of the people. Already he pours the world's balm into our breasts, and the angel choirs sweep the throne for him with flowers.
These words were written by the Polish writer Juliusz Żwowacki well over a century before one of his countrymen was elected to the See of Peter. He wrote them in 1848. In those years, Żwowacki may not have been taken too seriously. Not only was he a poet, but he also belonged to the Romantic movement. And at the time, the idea of a Polish pope may have seemed romantic enough. Certainly not a possibility. The papacy had, after all, been the privilege of Italians for over four centuries. So when this loyal son of Poland did become pope, many journalists were floored, among them Arthur Baum, who was standing in St. Peter's Square.
But I was fortunately on St. Peter's Square when the announcement was made. It was one of those wonderful October evenings that you get in Rome. 8 o'clock or so, it was getting dark, dusk. There again, the conclave ended. In that atmosphere, we were told that once more we had a new pope. And we listened intently for his name, Charles. And then came the name Wojtyła. And that left us all completely floored. We thought, someone from Africa? Who could it be? And it took some time for the news to get round that it was actually a man from Poland.
But perhaps to better understand this man from Poland elected as Roman pontiff, one must not only look to the Vatican, but to his roots, to his nation. This may be the most universal of pontiffs, the most media conscious, the most travelled and the most global, but it's still useful to step back in time and find out more about the Polish legacy he brought with him to the church. A legacy with a vision he so often spoke to journalists about himself. For example, he once told an Italian journalist of Polish origin,
I have carried with me the history, culture, experience and language of my nation. Having lived in a country that had to fight for its existence in the face of the aggression of its neighbours, I have understood what exploitation is. I put myself immediately on the side of the poor, the disinherited, the oppressed, the marginalised, and the defenceless.
Certainly, until recently, it was this public legacy he was perhaps best known for, one which will go down in history books, and one he allowed the world media to abundantly highlight. But there's also a more private part to his life. Penetrating the inner man is not an easy task. As he himself said on one much quoted occasion, they try to understand me from the outside, but I can only be understood from the inside. A remark which is in itself an invitation and a challenge to find out more about this mystical son of Poland, one I'd like to take up for a moment. Striking to me was his very personal approach to suffering in the latter part of his pontificate. One, he had the courage to let the media pry on with their cruel cameras, letting them scrutinise his every physical failing. And one that carries with it perhaps more inner joy than pain, as the pilgrims I put the question, do you view the Pope more as a symbol of joy than pain, picked up on.
Without suffering, we cannot see the joy.
In the suffering, he sees joy.
Well, I think that the Pope would probably be a symbol of joy because he gives people hope.
As this lady highlights, Pope John Paul II may certainly have chafed under the burden of infirmity, but in a world increasingly riddled with the culture of death, his suffering has become a shining beacon of hope. Already since the early days of his pontificate, one of his most striking features was the serenity of his prayer life, his ability to be absorbed in prayer in the public eye, despite the pointed cameras zooming in on him. People close to the Polish pontiff had told me about this striking feature, highlighting it again and again. But the first time I witnessed this personally was at a Marian shrine in Poland. Pope John Paul II prayed and prayed, kneeling in front of the silver icon of Our Lady, said to be miraculous. All the while, the 500 people in the church there and the over 20,000 outdoors were silent. The prayer lasted half an hour, upsetting scheduled plans, and was a lesson for all in itself. It happened in a place by the name of Kalvaria Zebrzydowska, nestling in the Beskidy Hills, a place familiar to him since childhood, given he used to reach it on foot with his father from his town. As his childhood chum, Jerzy Kluger, recounts.
When they were going to Kalvaria with the procession, they were walking all the way.
Yeah, which means a certain closeness. So the young Karol Wojtyła used to go
yes,
for a bit of...
Yes. He went there very often with his father. He prayed there with his father. His father was deeply religious.
This Marian shrine is a very Polish place, as Pope John Paul highlighted himself, invoking the protection of Our Lady. Grant, O Mother Calvary, that we may be one among ourselves and one with you.
I Tobie raz jeszcze wyznaję, to cóż tuż, Maria, to cóż tuż.
A much-needed prayer, the Pope explained, invoking Our Lady's help in granting families, the love which makes it possible to overcome problems, show young people a way to the future. Knows what was on this Polish Pope's mind as he came back to the familiar shrine for the second time in his pontificate. Certainly the closeness to his hometown must have made him nostalgic of his own family, his younger days. Days that, as we know, were marked by personal suffering, by many deaths in his immediate family. And at a more political level, the tragic context of repression he grew up under, first under the Nazi, then under the communist regimes. But suffering never crushed his love for life. There were also happier days, or anyway, happier moments, as Jerzy Kluger describes.
Every year there was a table tennis tournament.
Karol Wojtyła played table tennis.
Yes. He played quite well.
Would you describe the young Karol Wojtyła as a person who was deeply joyful or not?
He was very joyful. His greatest talent, when he was young, was dramatic. You know, his ambition was to become an actor. The way he spoke, this beautiful, you know, voice, you know, the expression, you know, that was his life, you know, his main aim in life. So, obviously, as an actor, he was doing the tragic parts and also comical parts. He was also good at that, very good. And he was very elegant always, you know. Then we had dancing schools and all that. I'm completely amusical and have no sense of rhythm, so I was just stepping on the feet of those poor girls which were dancing with me. Anyway, he was a very, very good dancer.
A description of normality there for Karol Wojtyła, which may have brought a smile to your face. In reality, expressing a profound ability to embrace life when the sun shines, as in this occasion or indeed in other relaxed occasions, such as the day this Pope and former university professor, reaching out to his Polish roots, enjoyed ambling around in the summer garden in the manner of the Greek peripatetic philosophers, rigorously speaking in his beloved language, with other university professors, such as cosmologist Professor Michael Heller, Polish-born as well.
He invites Polish physicists from Krakow and from other cities of Poland, and we suggested a few times to him that perhaps it should be made international, but he prefers to keep it Polish because it's his vacations, and he wants to use Polish language and to be more free, and devotes 3 or 4 days of his vacations at Castel Gandolfo for such discussions about physics, philosophy, theology, and we discussed cosmology, Big Bang, and particle physics, and philosophy, and chaos theory.
But this ability to embrace life was there on rainy days as well. Days when this frail and elderly man, cooped up in a personal garden of pain, may no longer have been able to speak well, but could still provide a key to reading into suffering. As we watched him in his twilight years, looking stalwartly to the future of old age. A symbol of joy rather than suffering, a symbol of the sacredness of life. Our special thanks there to Pope John Paul II's childhood friend Jerzy Kluger and to cosmologist Professor Michael Heller for sharing with us their very personal impressions. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.